When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
So in the year 2000, Disney released the Fantasia 2000 film in theaters, and I remember going to see it in IMAX. I think it felt like an event at the time. It was a, new musically inspired animation anthology from the mighty Disney. So, of course, I went to go see it. And to tell you the truth, I don't remember hardly any of the short stories in it. There's something with butterflies and Beethoven, and something with a volcano and a bunch of green spaces and like an Earth goddess character. But the one that landed right square between my eyes, and I remember like crystal clear certain images from it. I haven't watched it, probably, I guess, in 22 years, but I remember very clearly, this sort of landing on me and me like really responding emotionally was the Rhapsody in Blue piece, which if you haven't seen it, is this sort of short story about five or six different people all living in New York City, and they all are in a situation where they're longing for something. So there's this young man who works on a construction site, but he really wants to play the drums. There's a guy who's down on his luck and just wants to find a job. He's hungry. He's looking for work. He wants to do an honest day's work. He actually at one point tries to steal an apple and the police chase him away because he's just desperate. There's a little girl whose parents are very important, busy business people, and they have no time for her. So she's just ushered off from nanny to, some kind of tutor to, doing ballet practice. She's just always being shuffled around from event to event, never actually just being with mom and dad. There's this guy who I think he's the premise is he's kind of like a henpecked character. His wife is dragging him around town and he just wants to just relax and have fun, but she's sort of treating him as her personal servant throughout the story. Anyway, the part that hit me was when I guess it would be the climax of the story where things pivot. The young man on the construction site decides, to heck with it. I can't do this anymore. And he goes off to try out for a drumming audition. And he gets to play in a band. And when he gives up that job, he throws his hat or whatever, and like it cascades down. And the guy who's looking for work gets a job at the construction site. And now he's happy. And then some other, like that leads to another cascading event that trickles off to where the little girl whose parents don't pay any attention to her almost gets hit by a car, and the parents finally realize, oh my gosh, we could have lost her and we were never paying attention to her. Let's celebrate our child. I'm getting emotional just talking about this cartoon I haven't watched in 20 years. And, the henpecked guy winds up going, I forget how, but he's like, it ends with him like dancing with a bunch of dancing girls in this really joyful, not like gross, lecherous way. So what was I? I was like 25 when that came out. And I remember just like there's something that rang and resonated with me about this idea of like somebody making the choice that comes from their soul. They choose this thing that makes them complete, will heal the world kind of idea. Now, you can subscribe to that. You cannot subscribe to that. But I find that a very moving idea. This idea of like, what did the guy at the construction site do? Did he cure cancer? No. But he listened to what was in his soul and then he acted on it. And without his knowledge, it made it like rippled out and made all these other things better. I think there's something about that. There's something about recognizing and articulating our interconnectedness that I find really moving. And I think this is the same reason I really enjoy choral music. I don't go to like the opera and I don't go to like symphonic performances all that often, maybe once a year. But there's something about choral music that I find really deeply moving to. Just like so many people harmonizing their voices in that way. It just like hits me right in the middle. So why am I sharing this? This is one of the sort of themes of Baron von Baer, is like really trying to emphasize that whether we like it or not, whether we agree with each other or not, we all need each other. We're all connected to one another. And now let's get a little bit more practical about the expression of that idea. even if you're listening to this recording years after I recorded it, it's within living memory. We experienced, and in other ways are still experiencing, a global health crisis, a pandemic, right? In the beginning of, what was it? It was like late 2019, early 2020. And look at how fast that virus just ripped through our world. It did not take long for it to become an emergency. And when every variant of COVID-19 popped up, it was just like, oh, there's this thing called Omicron. Well, it's not in the United States yet. Oh my gosh, it's like 12 states now. Oh, now it's everywhere. Now it's everywhere. Can't avoid it. That right there just is, I can't imagine a clearer picture of our interdependence. And it really does, I mean, in the same way that I feel so moved by the image from Fantasia 2000, I'm also sort of deeply saddened by how we didn't, so many of us didn't see that interconnectedness through that global and urgent and shocking image of how quickly that, you know, that virus was everywhere. So it's something that's been important to me for a long time. I think it's interesting that this process of visiting upon all of the themes and ideas that went into Baron von Baer and the case of the two-faced statue, baronvonbaer.com. So many of these ideas go back like 20 years for me. These are things that have been in me and in my heart for a long time. And it's taken me a long time to find the story to express all this stuff. This is one of the reasons the book is so darn important to me. I've done a lot of different books over the years. I mean, Science Comics Rockets, which I co-authored with my wife, Anne, we kind of touch on some of these ideas. It was more through the lens of examining our relationship with animals and how we treat animals, which is a kind of interconnectivity, but this is like more broadly. So what am I saying about, I mean, how does this like manifest in Baron von Baer without spoiling anything? Adventure genre fiction tends to, not always, there's a lot of good examples of this not being the case, but a lot of cases, especially in young people's fiction, it tends to be like good versus evil. Here's the heroes, here's the villains. It's really binary and it's easy to understand. And I love it. Don't get me wrong, I love it. And especially for me, when I'm watching something like He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, I'm really interpreting those stories through the lens of, these are all little pieces of my own psyche. Skeletor is as much in me as Prince Adam is in me. So that othering of the villains, and I think in the best kids' cartoons, the villains all have a certain lovableness to them, a certain compassion that's extended to them. They're not just Snidely Whiplash there to be nasty and twist their mustache. But in any case, I consume that stuff with that lens. So I can identify with the villains as much as the heroes, and often I talk about villains in my comics classes as they're often the most fun to write because they get to say and do all the terrible things you want to do, but society and your own ego and your own sense of ethics and morality won't allow you to do, right? Going back to that like Union Shadow stuff. But there's something also, I think, kind of, I don't want to say dangerous, but there's something I find a lot of discomfort in exploring adventure stories with a clear hero, clear villain. And I'm not saying I want to bring in anti-heroes or any kind of like subtle gradations of heroism. It's just that the interconnectedness gets lost when you turn it into, well, there's the villain we have to conquer. I'm reminded of something I read, again, this goes back 20 years now, when I first read The Tao Te Ching. And it was another moment that just like really, I felt like something was opening up in front of me when I started reading that book. And there's a line in it that runs something along the lines of, the master enters the battlefield gravely as if attending a funeral, because demonizing an opponent not only is horrible to them, but it does something bad to you. It ruins something inside of you. I talk about this a lot in that Transformers podcast I did with my buddy Hoover 4 million years later, you know, really examining this kid's cartoon where there's like, here's the heroes, here's the villains, you know, we hate the villains, don't we? They're bad. We don't hate the villains because the writers are really careful to make the villains really interesting and lovable in their own way. Anyway, so I knew with Baron von Baer, I didn't want to do a story where the villain is thrown down a pit. The villain is disposed of in some way. This power is taken away, and then he's humiliated and run out of town by everybody. There's an element of that in the story. There is a piece of that, because I do think there is a cathartic value, and there's also the notion that some, to quote the sorceress from He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, some people are just blind. They can't tell right from wrong, and if you can't negotiate with them, well... Then maybe it's the time to run them out of town, because like they're toxic for your environment. But recognizing that even if you don't agree on everything, we all have to live in this world, and we're all interconnected in some way. And finding another way. I mean, this is, again, not to keep talking about He-Man, because I talk about it enough, but it's one of the reasons I love that cartoon so much, because like he really does try to find every conceivable option besides hurting anybody. But yet he'll still taunt Skeletor. He'll still call him names and stuff, and he'll still tell him that, like, no, you're pure grade A wrong about this. But if he can negotiate with somebody, he'll do it. And I think that method points to a recognition that we all are connected in some way, and we all have to deal with each other whether we like it or not. So... that's an important piece of the story for me. Now, I feel like stories like, when I begin teasing out this idea, I immediately think of films like Jim Henson's The Dark Crystal, where, spoilers, wait for it, you can fast forward 5 seconds, at the end, the villains, the Skeksis, and the Mystics, who are sort of like the wizards supporting our heroes, we find out that they're two halves of a whole, and they get like reunited at the end, right? And so that's like a very clear and... sort of, I wouldn't say on the nose, but it's like a very strong statement of the principle that I'm talking about. It's like expressing like how I consume children's fiction in my head, but in a very visual and clear way within the narrative. That they're both in you. I didn't want to go that far. I didn't want, because like another thing that I try to avoid in my work is I don't want it to come across as teaching. I want there to be supportive material in the work, but it's really... again, first and foremost, I've said this a lot, it's an entertainment. And so I didn't, and I'm not saying that Dark Crystal is not an entertainment, by the way. I'm just saying that like that kind of like very direct and clear and unambiguous depiction of a theme was something I wasn't quite as eager to do in Baron von Bear, but I wanted it to be there. So the climax of the book involves, yeah, it's adventure fiction. There's a battle, and it's a cool looking battle, if I do say so myself. And I will, because I think there's some really nice looking pages in there. There's a scene where somebody like makes a dive out of the sky and smashes into the ground. It does that rippling thing. And I think it looks really cool. And there's a lot of emotion tied into that moment. It's really cool. You should check it out at baronvonbear.com. But how the problem is ultimately solved, it's not in physically overcoming somebody. I've been talking about this for a decade now. Like, since I did my very first Boulder and Fleet mini comic, which was, it was like about 10, 12 years ago, I became very focused and intent on exploring exciting action adventure where the battle isn't concluded with the physically overcoming of a villain. Like I said, it feels cathartic when it happens. And catharsis is a useful and real thing. But I'd like to have both. I'd like to have the catharsis, but I'd also like to have the hero actually do their level best to circle back to this kind of interconnectedness, because turning a villain, or rather treating another person as a villain, does something nasty to the hero as well, in my opinion. So, yeah, that's one of the themes of the book. I hope, you know, if that resonates with you, I hope you will check out Baron von Bear at baronvonbear.com. I said the web address, I think, 3 times in this one. And if you like the way I think about these kinds of storytelling principles, ideas, and philosophies, you can suggest or ask more follow-ups via baronvonbear.com/AMA. That's an Ask Me Anything. And you can propose a thought, question, or wondering. Doesn't have to be anything as fully formed as a question. I'll do my best with what you send me. And it's totally anonymous. I'm not collecting names or email addresses. Just trying to find out what you're curious about so I can bring it to these microcasts to help make people more aware of this book that means so much to me. I mean, I hope you heard it in there. I mean, I like there was a couple times where I had to keep like slow down to like it's like, oh, I'm gonna get a little weepy as I talk about interconnectedness. So thank you for believing in this project and supporting it, and however you do it, by clicking whatever buttons are there at baronvonbear.com. And I'll be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody.
Helping his dragon friend sure kept He-Man busy today. And Brindle's tests were pretty tough. In one of those tests to prove his courage, he was challenged to a fight. But He-Man wouldn't fight.
The fact is, fighting never proves anything. Trying to find a peaceful way to settle a problem is usually the best way. And if someone calls you a coward or a chicken, don't let it worry you. It often takes more courage not to fight. Until later, bye now.